Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hi, folks. Be sure to visit my webpage at dr-history.com for over 440 true stories of the Old West. Also, now available on Amazon, my first book, a historical fiction based on true events entitled Coal Miner to Cowboy. The story of a young man born in England in 1850. He wants to be a cowboy and makes his way to America, travels from New Orleans to Independence on a steamboat, hires on as a teamster to Santa Fe, then on a cattle drive to Bozeman, Montana. He also rides shotgun on a stagecoach. He travels with a wagon train, and on his two-year journey, he meets some famous people and keeps a journal of his adventures. The book contains a lot of the true stories from my podcast and is now available on Amazon. Visit my webpage for a link to Amazon for the book, Coal Miner to Cowboy.
And right now, as he marched in with his entourage, here's Dr. History.
Good morning, Zeb.
Hi, my friend. Hey, have we heard from Dr. Zubelflooster or whatever
his name is?
That's what I thought.
Yes, and he sent me something with a German name that I won't even begin to pronounce, but it's a instrument for taking the shell off of a soft-boiled egg and eating the contents of a soft-boiled egg. It's an instrument that...
Does this really intrigue you?
Well, you sent me a video. Now I know
so
how it works.
It's a soft-boiled egg.
Right. And it's in a little cup like that.
Yeah. And he sent you a video that he thought was absolutely world-needed at this time.
And it was interesting because I
I'll bet it was earth-shattering. I'm surprised they didn't have it on Fox News.
It was good. Thanks, Schnitzel.
So did you try it?
Well, no. I don't have one of those little instrument things for...
Oh.
But I might see if I can find one.
Okay. What are we going to talk about this
before
morning?
We start, anybody that bought my book on Amazon,
yes,
would you please, if you wouldn't mind, giving a review on Amazon?
Oh, yeah.
I would appreciate that.
I'll give you a review, too.
Thank you.
I absolutely enjoyed the book, and for the personality that was the lead character in the book, knowing that it was you,
yes,
I absolutely enjoyed it and wondered where you went wrong.
That's what a lot of people.
You ought to write a book called From Cowboy to Chiropractor.
I don't think that would sell.
Okay.
So today, we're just going to go back to 1950 for a few minutes.
All right.
So 1950, we're in Rawlings, Wyoming,
okay,
and there's a couple of guys working. One guy's on a big old excavator, and he's digging holes. And while he's digging away, a guy down on the ground yells at him and says, "Hey, wait a minute. There's something here in the dirt."
Mm-hmm.
And he says, "What is it?" "Well, it's some kind of a wooden barrel." And he says, "Well, there's a lot of whiskey barrels buried around in this area, so it's no big deal. It's just another whiskey barrel." And he says, "Well, this one's different. This one has bones in it." They had cracked open the top, and there were bones. So the worker in the excavator, he got down from the cab onto the street. They'd been excavating for a new business that was going in there in Rawlings, Wyoming. And he dug down several feet when the barrel was found, and the top of the barrel had split in two, and they could look down in, and there were a bunch of bones.
Really?
Okay. So Rawlings, you know, in 1950 was a pretty small town, and is typically the case in small towns, news traveled fast, and before the two men realized, they had become surrounded by a bunch of townspeople who had heard of the discovery of some bones. And as the crowd gathered, the workmen removed some of the bones, and they notified the authorities.
Okay.
So, still 1950,
mm-hmm,
when the medical examiner arrived on the scene, he removed more of the bones, including the skull, and that's when he noticed part of the skull was missing.
Wait a minute.
The intrigue.
And all this was in the barrel.
Yeah, yeah. So, the medical examiner told the police officer, he says, "The top of this skull has been sawed off."
You're getting pretty gruesome.
Oh, I'm not done.
I was afraid of that.
"And by the looks of it," he said, "I'd say it was done by a doctor."
the top of the skull.
Oh, my.
So then they asked the question, isn't this old Dr. McGee's place? So you'll see what I'm talking about.
No, I can't wait.
Okay. So the medical examiner said, I think we just found Big Nose George.
I'm not even going to make a comment.
Okay, here we go. We talked about Big Nose Kate. This is Big Nose George. Now, Big Nose George Parrott, also known as George Francis Warden or George Manews or George Curry, gained his name from the rather large proboscis on his face.
Yeah, but isn't it interesting? His last name was Parrott.
Yeah, right. I thought that was interesting, too. Well, Parrott was an outlaw who terrorized the Wyoming Territory, the Dakota Territory, and portions of Montana for much of about the 1870s. So now we're back to 1870, right in there.
Okay.
So while he was rumored to have ridden with Frank and Jesse James before they came to fame, he mostly traveled with just unknown outlaws. Nobody knew him. But Parrott is famous in the history of Wyoming, not for the crimes he committed, but for his extremely unusual death. And we're going to get to that.
I figured.
So not much is known about the man. There's no records of when he was born, who his parents are, or where he was from. The story of George's demise began one day in August of 1878 when he and his gang decided to rob the Union Pacific westbound Express No. 3, which operated near Medicine Bow, Wyoming. The gang pulled up a section of track, but before they could complete the robbery, an alert foreman discovered the damage and warned the oncoming train.
Oh, my.
So already they're not very good at robbing trains. Now, although the damage was repaired and the train eventually passed without incident, a local deputy sheriff by the name of Robert Whittlefield and a special agent from the Union Pacific, Henry H. Tip Vinson, decided to track down George and his gang. Whittlefield and Vincent followed the men to a place called Elk Mountain, but as they drew near, Whittlefield was shot and killed by one of the gang members, a guy named Dutch Charlie.
Interesting name.
Dutch Charlie. Not to be left out, George shot and killed the special agent, Vincent.
Holy
So now
God.
They've already killed two, you know, a police officer and a special agent.
Yeah.
So, not very good guys.
No.
So, the gang hightailed it to Montana, stopping along the way to rob a store, a mercantile store. Once in Montana, the gang holed up with a group of trappers. Now, unfortunately for Parrott, not only did he have a big nose, he also had a big mouth.
Boy, that's a mess.
While in town, he often bragged about his exploits, what he'd done, telling people of his gang's intention to rob the train and how they killed the two lawmen. I mean, would you brag about that?
So he was sitting there telling people he didn't know?
Yeah, just, you know.
Never did graduate from grade school, did he?
No. Well, so that led to the capture and the hanging of one of the gang members, Dutch Charlie.
Oh,
he got caught.
Poor old Dutch Charlie.
And a group of vigilantes pulled him from the number 3 train, the very train they had tried to rob, and hanged him from a nearby telephone.
They didn't wait, did they?
No. They didn't.
They let him have it.
They got her done.
That was what we need today.
We do. So Parrott's gang continued to hold up stagecoaches, raising the reward for his capture to $2,000, which in 1879...
That's a lot of money.
You know, 40 or 50 or 60,000 today at least.
Yeah.
So shortly after July 1880, Parrott was in Miles City, Montana. You've probably been there.
Yep, and that's a good place to get in trouble.
Okay. Spending the money he'd gained from his many stagecoach robberies, as legend has it, the landlady of the boarding house where Parrott chose to stay had been a passenger on one of the stagecoaches he had robbed.
Oh, he's
so
in trouble.
She recognized him.
Yeah, well, his big nose.
Obviously, even with a bandana.
Yeah.
It would probably...
Can you imagine with a bandana, it looked like a tent?
Yeah, I mean, we'll move on.
Okay,
so anyway, she turned him in to Sheriff Robert Rankin, took one of his deputies, and they rode over to Miles City, Montana, where they arrested Parrott without any problem.
Really?
They just got him.
Uh-huh.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Now, on the train ride back on August 7th, 20 masked men, reportedly the same mob who had lynched Dutch Charlie, so a vigilante group, boarded the train. They pulled Parrott out to the platform, put a noose around his neck, and strung him up.
Oh, really?
Well, it's not over.
Oh.
As Parrott began choking, the group lowered him and demanded a full confession. When Parrott refused, they hoisted him up again. Parrott soon kind of gave in, and he confessed to all of his crimes, including the killing of Special Agent Vincent.
Now what?
Now Parrott stood trial.
So
they didn't keep hanging.
Oh, they didn't keep choking him.
Nope.
Oh.
So he stood trial on December 15th, 1880 in Rawlins, Wyoming. He was found guilty and sentenced to hang almost 4 months later in 1881. Now, he really wasn't anxious to be hung a second time.
Can you imagine?
Yeah. So Parrott determined to escape his jail cell. And on March 20th, 1881, he made his move.
What jail was this?
It's in Rawlins.
In Rawlins. Yeah. Okay. Uh-huh. All right.
Yeah. So on March 20th, 1881, he made his move. He managed to loose himself from his heavy metal handcuffs and used those cuffs to attack the sheriff, Sheriff Rankin.
Okay.
Started beating him up.
Oh, my.
So while Rankin received some pretty bad injuries, Parrott's escape was spoiled by the sheriff's wife from her home in the house, that which was connected to the jail. She heard all this ruckus going on, heard the beating going on, and seeing her husband being attacked, she locked the door to the jail so that Parrott could not escape.
So he actually got out of the cell.
He got out of the cell.
But he's locked in the office.
Yeah, so he's still locked up in there.
Okay.
Well, the townsfolk had had enough of Parrott. 2 days after the failed escape attempt, they stormed the jail. They dragged him out to a nearby telephone pole. And this gets a little bit gruesome. Well, it's not. You'll see.
Why should we be surprised?
Exactly. They tied his arms and legs and then threw the end of the rope up and over the pole. The group then slipped the noose around Parrott's neck and they strung him up. However, the rope broke.
Yeah, you can't buy good rope anywhere.
He fell so hard to the ground and managed to untie his hands. His feet were still tied, but Parrott climbed up a ladder resting against the telephone pole. The crowd grabbed him, and as the rope was tightened, they managed to get it around his neck. Parrott tried to fight off the crowd, but as he did, the ladder was knocked out from under him, and he was hanging there. He still wasn't willing to die. He wasn't done. He grabbed hold of the pole with his free hands and tried to climb it. Can you picture this?
Well, my question would be, as a interested observer, when you get to the top of the pole, what's your future going to be?
Well, and how long can you hang on, you know? So, anyway, he soon let go of the pole.
And said.
And he was done.
He's done. Toast.
Well, the crowd was convinced of, they were, when the crowd was convinced of Parrott's death, they took him down. But they were afraid he might still find a way to survive, so they strung him up again.
That's a good thing. Well, you know, they
make sure.
They'll rerun, know, like on TV.
You know, they were maybe a little new at hanging people.
Yeah, I see.
You know? So, well, the body hung for almost an entire day before.
Was that enough?
I think so. Before it was cut down by coroner A.G. Edgerton, who took the body to a nearby undertaking parlor and performed an autopsy.
Oh.
Now, here it gets a little more interesting. He was assisted by Dr. John Osborne, Dr. McGee, and Lillian Heath, who was a 15-year-old assistant to Dr. McGee.
I see.
Now, Edgerton cut the top of Parrott's head off to examine his brain.
But did they find anything?
Reportedly looking to see if it was somehow different from a normal human brain.
I see.
It wasn't. It looked the same. So it was at this point that Parrott's place was cemented in Wyoming history, as the situation kind of took an unusual turn of events.
I would say.
Okay, Dr. Osborne took possession of the body. he gave the skull cap to Lillian Heath, the 15-year-old girl.
A 15-year-old girl wanted that?
Yeah, she was. She actually became the first woman doctor in the state of Wyoming later on, 15-year-old. So she had an interest in medicine.
I would say.
Anyway, so I hesitate to go through this next part, but I have to do it.
All right.
Because it's historical.
Okay. Here we go. It's hysterical and it's historical. Okay.
So Osborne, Dr. Osborne, then cut portions of Parrott's skin. For reasons that can only be labeled as bizarre, Osborne had the skin tanned, sent to a local shoemaker to have a pair of shoes made.
This is the doctor that did this?
Yeah, yeah.
That's gruesome.
It is. Now, the shoemaker did make a pair of two-toned shoes from the skin provided by Dr. Osborne. Okay. Now, doctor.
What kind of, were they to the point where you had to oil them every day?
I don't know what they did with them, Zeb. I'm not even going to go there.
Right.
Dr. John Osborne went on to become the third governor of the state of Wyoming.
Oh, my.
He wore the shoes to his inauguration.
You've got to be kidding me.
I mean, I have a hard time with that. You know, how
would you want to even touch them?
No, no. I'd want to bury them. So anyway, the rest of Parrott's remains were placed in a whiskey barrel filled with a saline solution and buried behind Dr. McGee's old office. So when the bones were found in this excavation in 1950, they found that the skull cap was missing, you know, that it was still gone. Dr. Heath, the 15-year-old young woman who had been present at the autopsy, was still alive in her 80s. She had been using the top of Parrott's head as a doorstop and reportedly as an ashtray.
You know, I thought... Just when you think you're going to start to get back to normalcy, you fall off the road.
Well, the skull cap was brought to the site.
A doorstop?
Yeah, and an ashtray. The skull cap was brought to the site, placed on top of the skull, and determined to be an exact fit. So it was actually the thing. DNA tests years later would confirm that the skull cap and bones were from the same source.
You know, so back in those days, have you noticed a little bit of gruesomeness?
Yeah, you could call it that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So here's the historical part.
Yeah.
The remains of George, Big Nose Parrott, now rest in two separate locations, never to be reunited. The skull and those strange shoes are on display at the Carbon County Museum in Rawlins, Wyoming.
Really?
The shackles Parrott used in his failed escape and the skull cap are on display at the Union Pacific Museum in Omaha, Nebraska.
Did the governor, after he had those shoes made of that skin, did he notice that he could, climb tall trees and posts and everything?
I think he avoided telephone poles and ropes. I mean, you know.
This is sick.
It is. And, you know, but, you know, I've told stories before about vigilantes.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there was one that happened up here south, north of us up by Shoshone area.
Yeah.
Where a guy was a horse thief. They caught him. He was a horse thief. And I've told you this before, but they didn't have any trees up there. And so they pulled two wagons together and put the tongues up in the air. Tied them together so they're up in the air. They tied the wagon wheels so they wouldn't move. And they strung this guy up from the two trees.
Yeah.
The
main hitch.
The pole.
Yeah, the bar.
I can't think of what it's called.
Neither one of us can.
Anyway, so they were hanging up. You know, they hung this guy from the.
Holy smokes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they left him there for a while, and they didn't have any trouble with horse thieves for quite a while.
Well, see, this is the whole thing about crime today. Do you not see that we've got to be tougher and make examples of some of these people?
Yeah. And, you know, maybe they hung a few people they shouldn't have. I don't know.
Yeah.
But
Big Nose, what, George?
Big Nose George Parrott.
Yeah.
You know, the title of this is The Skinning of Big Nose George Parrott.
That's the title of this?
Yeah. And I got this when I was in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, this book right here. It happened in Wyoming.
And it's a true story.
By Paul W. Papa.
Oh, my goodness.
So.
But, you know, really, when you think of the Old West, They did not put up with any foolishness, maybe once, but twice was not an option.
Well, there's another story that goes through my family of...
Did you have horse thieves in your family?
Well, that possibly too.
Okay.
But this one particular relative, years and years ago, his wife was at home, and a vagrant came by and he wanted something to eat. And so she said, well, you go out and chop that wood, and then I'll give you something to eat. Well, he got the axe, and he attacked this lady.
Oh, my goodness.
Anyway, the husband came, and... he followed this guy and just beat the heck out of him.
Did he kill the lady?
No, he didn't. But he attacked her pretty viciously.
Oh, my goodness.
And, but the husband and his neighbor went and caught this guy and beat the heck out of him. And then the sheriff came by and said, well, you did what had to be done.
Absolutely.
So,
too bad we don't have more of that kind of justice.
Yeah. Yep.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for that kind of disengaged story about Big Nose George.
Yeah, and just enjoy lunch today.
Yeah, you know, but I still can't get it out of my mind, the 15-year-old girl.
Right.
The callousness of using somebody's head, part of a head, for a doorstop.
Well, I've got to tell you, Zeb, when I was in chiropractic college in Los Angeles, we dissected... people from head to toe.
Yeah.
And we did cut the top of the head off, the skull, so we could examine the brain.
Right.
So that wasn't, I guess, that unusual to examine the brain.
But you didn't use it as a doorstop.
No, we didn't.
Or an ashtray.
No.
Okay.
We left it there.
Dr. History has completely done it again.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.